Need a little bit of hope for your life today? Michael's story is front and center on this edition of Chris Fabry Live, and I guarantee you that the hope he found is the same hope that can infuse your life no matter the obstacle you're up against. Michael didn't have much hope growing up in South Sudan with war all around him. You're going to hear his story today, and we're going to get a front row seat to the truth that God does not waste our pain, and the people he often uses to change the world have a wound. As Michael says, the passion he has for life and for helping others comes from the biggest pain in his life. You'll hear his story straight ahead on Chris Fabry Live. Welcome to our Monday edition of The Continuing Conversation. We thank our team, Ryan Conahay, doing all things technical. Trish is our producer. Anthony will be answering your calls. And let me thank those who support this program, too. I think a lot of people reach out because they have heard some kind of hope story on this program, or they have found a hope resource, and you want to give that to other people because it's impacted you. You want others to experience that. So thank you for your gifts, for your support. Sometimes I think people hear our thank you for the month, and they get kind of excited about what that resource might do for them or someone they know who might need it. And our thank you for two more weeks is Philip Keller's classic, A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. It's a hardback book. It's beautifully illustrated. But the insights into the 23rd Psalm is why I want to send you this timeless faith classic. Give a gift of any size today by going to chrisfabrylive.org. Scroll down. You'll see how to give right there. Become a partner or a friend with us. chrisfabrylive.org or call 866-95-FABRY, F-A-B-R-Y, 866-953-2279. Thank you for your support at the Radio Backyard Fence. You know the two Michaels, right? You know Michael Card. Today, you're going to meet Michael Panther. He is the founder and executive director of the ministry Living with Hope, which has now become or is becoming Hope Mobility. If you go to their website, you'll see Living with Hope and then go to Hope Mobility. Michael is a paraplegic. He's a native of South Sudan. He advocates for people with disabilities around the world. His story is an amazing tour of the goodness and the mercy and the grace of God. It's called Living with Hope, a true story of faith, purpose, and mobility. You can find that at our website as well, chrisfabrylive.org. Michael Panther, welcome to the program. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Chris. It's so good to be with you.
You got Johnny Erickson Tada to write your foreword for you. Tell me what Johnny means to you.
Oh, man, Johnny is an incredible lady, a lady that has inspired so many people around the world, including myself. My story with her go back when I was in a hospital at Cure in Kenya, when I watched a video and I saw this lady who was a normal young lady, and you got into a diving accident and a life turned around. And I see her from being in bed to getting up, start doing a ministry that impacted so many people. So I remember just praying, God, if you save my life, use my life like Johnny. Mm-hmm. And I never know down the line that I will be able to connect with her and be able to be her friend, and just been a huge mentor in my life.
Yes. And God has done that, hasn't he? I mean, in a lot of ways, God has answered that prayer or that dream of yours when you were young.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, he has done a lot of those in my life. So this journey of mine, I never thought it would have been possible. And God has brought me here. And I remember most of the prayers that I pray that came to fruitful. And it's just been a blessing to see that.
Michael Panther is with us, and I want to ask you, I want you to listen as you listen today, friend. What is the deep pain in your life right now? What is the struggle, the wound that you are going through that you want to get past, you want to get through, you want that out of your life? With Michael and with many others, that deep pain led to a deep passion that God has given. So I want you to listen through that lens today. But I see that truth over and over and over again, Michael, that the passion, the deep passion that you have was born out of your deepest pain. Is that true in your life?
Yes, yes. You know, just to give you a little bit about my story, you know, I was born in Sudan, in South Sudan. And for some of you who don't know, you know, Sudan has been embroiled in intensive civil war for many decades between the northern part and the southern part of the Sudan. And sometimes those reasons of war are always complex. But at the heart of the conflict has been the struggle for power, economic resources, and more importantly, the southern part where I'm from. We're fighting for the freedom, a freedom to worship God. And so caught in the middle of that has been the civilian, the very innocent people like myself, my family members, the community that I was in. Even during that time, I lost two dear brothers and at a very young age. And it is always a difficult pain to bear because they did not deserve to die. And I remember, you know, I still remember those memories, you know. So those pain of the Civil War and the sickness that I had later on gave me the passion to be able to do what I'm doing today.
Yeah, and you have been empowered by God to do it as well. There's the gospel story, you heard that pretty early on. I think you were about 10 years old. So rather than have you start that and then take a break, let me take one right now, and we'll come back with more from Michael Panther. If you go to the website, we have a link to the web to their website, Living with Hope or Hope Mobility. And we also have a link to the book, Living with Hope, A True Story of Faith, Purpose, and Mobility. You'll see that at chrisfabrylive.org. Michael Panther is our guest today at the Radio Backyard Fence. Living with Hope is our featured resource. It's his story, the true story of growing up in South Sudan, and well, we're going to get into it here at the Radio Backyard Fence. Should you want to talk with Michael, 877-548-3675. I think you were about 10 years old. Now, if I get my math correct, because you told me before we went on exactly how old you are, you were born around 1992 or 93 or somewhere in there. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, around that time.
Around yes. That time. But do you know the exact date or no?
Well, what I know for sure is that my mom mentioned to me that I was born around Christmas time. And okay. So I remember, she remembered that people were going to church under the tree for Christmas, and she was left behind because she was in labor. So that's what I know for sure. But the year that I was born is a little bit questionable.
Okay, got it. Yeah, so yes. Tell me about the village that you grew up in then. What did most of the people do there for food? Did you have livestock, animals? Did you grow things? What was it like?
Yes, our village, you know, we around the time that I was born, we keep moving around. We never had a place that we call home because of the attack. Sometime we'll settle in one place and grow what crop we can grow at that time if the place is a little bit peaceful. But if there's no peace, then we'll keep moving around and we'll just survive what we can, you know, the wild animals or the fish in the river. So that's how we survive.
Yes. And you were getting ready to go into the defense forces with the Civil War kind of raging. You were only 10 years old, but they were training you for service. Is that right?
Yes, yes. So I got trained and to, you know, was getting ready as a young boy. When you reach a certain age, around 10 years old, you get, you know, trained to go to be a fighter for the country. And so I was approaching that year, and actually just before that, as you mentioned before, how I first came to know the Lord, was around that time before I even before I got sick and even want to go to the Defense Force.
What happened? What did the path, was there a pastor or someone who traveled around and taught or what?
Yes, so we move around every time and just running for our life because of the war. But when we have a chance, we'll gather under the tree every Sunday to worship God, and we normally cry out for to God for peace and for His mercy as all those things were going around. And so as a young boy, I began to pay more attention to the Word of God. And I remember the one Sunday as we gather under the tree, one of the elders was the one that was sharing that Sunday, and he had his Bible was a lot of pages missing, and I think the remaining part was probably one of the part of the good news. And he opened John 3:16, that for God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. And I was deeply moved by the idea of God love. During that time, I was getting ready to go to be trained. And I remember my mom and some of the parents were all, crying, and they're very hesitant for us to go to war because they don't want us to go and die. But here is God, our Father in heaven, give His only Son for us to die for us. And just kind of having that sense of His love really touched me. And I right there under the tree, in the middle of the forest where we were living, I gave my life to Christ. And I knew at that time that even if I go to this war and go and die and don't make it, I know where I'm going. I'm gonna go to heaven. And that gave me a sense of hope in life.
And it strikes me, Michael, you've used this phrase three or four times already, under the tree. Your mother remembers that they went under the tree, and it was around Christmas time. Under the tree, that's where you met Jesus. The reason why you were under a tree, my guess is because that's where it's cooler. If you don't want to be out in the middle of the sun, you get under the tree for the shade and for the seclusion of it. Is that true?
Absolutely, yeah. Because yeah, it's cooler there, and also we didn't have home. We
Right.
never had a place to call home. So the trees were our home at that time. We'll set up there, and we'll cook under the tree. We will sleep under the tree, and that's where we live before we move to the next place.
So do you remember being able to run around, run really fast, and play with the other boys and girls in the village?
Oh yes, I always joke to this day that if it is today, I could win a marathon because I was fast. I was running around, very active boy. Full of energy and everything. And
Yes.
then I suddenly got sick,
Okay,
and we
talk about
didn't.
that then. Where did when did
Yes.
you wh how do you know how you got sick and what did it look like?
Yeah, I just happened to waking up and started feeling a lot of weaknesses, and I could not run. I didn't have the energy that I used to have before, and I started feeling a lot of pain in my back, and my legs start getting weak. And of course, due to civil war, there were no medical facilities, and they were non-existent, so I could not go and get checked and be seen what was wrong with me. And so my father and then my mother were very determined to get me some help. So they want me to go to the neighboring country. And my father was the one that's gonna take me and leave my mom and young sibling behind. But I didn't want that idea because I didn't want my dad to leave my mom and the younger siblings because he was the provider and the protector of our family at that time. So if he goes with me, who's gonna protect my younger siblings, my mom, and who's gonna trying to look for food for them? So I didn't wanna entertain that idea. But they already made up their mind, and they were determined for me and my dad to go. And so at that time, really, I was very overcome, by the emotions of, just knowing that if I leave with my dad, my parents, my mom, and my sibling will not be protected, and they may not be alive. And also the journey that lie ahead of us, I didn't know that we're gonna make it to Kenya. And so I was really just kind of torn apart. But because they were my parents, I had to obey and listen. And so we went, my mom just say that, "Hey, I want you, my son, to be healed and to be okay, and so we'll do everything that we can to save your life."
You know, it
My
strikes me, Michael, it strikes
yes.
me that you probably knew some other boys in the village who are about the same age as you who
Yes.
didn't make it because they were trained to go to war and they went there and they lost their lives.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, there's so many, some of my friends at that time, when I got sick, they left, to go to war, and I was left behind. Was my mom and the women in the village. I just believe at that time, and I later learned that God has a plan. If I had gone to the war, I would have not be alive today. So God has a plan, and my parents were trusting the Lord. My mom was a rock of the family. She trusted God, even with all the pain that she had to go through, losing two of her sons, and then me again suffering, not knowing that I will survive. So he trusted the Lord, and he said that, "Go, my son, with your dad. God is gonna take care of you, and God is gonna protect us."
And you called your dad Baba, is that right?
Yes, Baba here, and Mama.
Okay, so let me jump forward because there's so much here, folks. There's no way to get all of this in. There's no way to get all these questions answered. But do you know, that was 30, well, it was 20 years ago. Do you know where your mom and your sibling is, where your dad is now? Do you know what happened to them after all this happened to you?
Yes, my mom and my dad and my siblings are alive today. Thank God, he protected, just the word of my mom when he said that God is gonna protect us. God protected them, and they're still alive to this day. But it was not until some difficult journey on their end, and my difficult journey as well, leaving South Sudan to come to Kenya. But God was there with all of us. He protected us, and he reunited us back in 2018.
Oh, wow. So
Yes.
your dad decided to take you to a refugee camp, that would be the best place to take you. And it strikes me that your mother had to let go. There was probably some of her thinking that would say, no, let's keep Michael near us. Let's keep him here. Even if he's sick, maybe he'll get better. But the greater good, for you was to allow you to go and allow your dad to take you. But this refugee camp, yeah, do you know how far away, how far that trip was from where you were to where you needed to go?
Yes, the journey was very long. It was a very difficult journey. It took us months. Some walking on foot with my dad, him carrying me in the water, in the jungle, where the animals were kind of running all over. And remember, we made it to a small camp in South Sudan, and more like a humanitarian camp. And the God provided a plane, a small plane to take us, to bring us to Kenya, to the refugee camp. And we came to the camp, and God also provides an opportunity to get help by sending a mission doctor to come to the camp. And they looked at me and they say, "We need to bring you to our hospital." But that journey itself took me about 2 years, from the time that I got sick to the time that I made it to the hospital. And by that time, the disease has already done a lot of damage in my body.
Yes. As a matter of fact, there's a video. If you go to the website that we have linked to, Living with Hope, you'll see the doctor, the surgeon that dealt with you, and his wife as well. And there were a lot of, you know, ups and downs with your condition, and, you know, would this heal you? You know, would you be able to walk again? Did you think once you got to the hospital that you would be able to walk again?
Oh yeah, that was my hope. You know, I was really very excited when I finally made it to the hospitals. You know, I say, "Oh, now I'm gonna come get help, walk again, and go back to Sudan and enjoy my life." You know, either go back to be a fighter or whatever God has planned for me at that time. So yeah, so I was hoping that I was gonna get healed and enjoy life. But God has another plan at that time. After the surgery, I developed a lot of complications, and I was in ICU for about 3 months. And I remember just, you know, getting so frustrated with God. I was completely hopeless. I became depressed. I had a lot of questions that I was asking God. Like, what have I done to deserve this? What hope can I find in my suffering? Do you love me, God? I had a lot of questions that I just been, you know, just going through my mind, because it was a pain that was too heavy for me to bear. Yes. And it was during that time when I hit the rock bottom that God revealed himself to me. And
well, it's much the same as the story of Johnny Tada, because when she was in that situation, when she knew that she would be paralyzed for the rest of her natural life, yes. There was a lot of depression and a lot, you know, she had to struggle with that as well. Real quickly, did your dad, did he get to go to the hospital with you, or were you alone?
Some parts. In the beginning, I was sent alone in the refugee camp. I was able to be sponsored by the United Nations at that time, but they could only take me to go to the hospital. But they later found out that I was young. They could not perform the surgery. The doctors could not perform the surgery without an adult. So they had to send somebody. And of course, my dad did not know the language, so they had to find somebody in the refugee camp who could speak the language to be able to translate for me. And so after I stayed in the hospital for, you know, I stayed there for around 2 years, and I started learning the language so that I could talk with everybody, the nurses and the doctors. And that's when my dad was able to come and stay with me again. So when I was able to be able to translate for
Then
both
now
of
that's
us.
amazing. 10, 11, 12 years old, and you're all alone, and you can't understand what the people are saying around you. You know that they care for you, they want to help you. Can't you, as you listen to that, put yourself in that situation, and allowing then your son to be flown away because you can't go. What Baba did with this. This is an amazing story. We're going to continue it. You have to hear what happened to Michael Panther. Living with Hope is the book that tells the story. It's our featured resource at chrisfabrylive.org. Go to the website as well. We have link right there, and you can see that video where you'll see the doctor and his wife and the part they play in all of this. More straight ahead. This is Chris Fabry Live on Moody Radio. We're talking about living with hope. You got to have hope. You got to have it in order to live, to be fully alive. And I think there's probably somebody who needs hope today because their world has imploded. They've been given the news. They're pregnant and they're not ready for that. I'm so glad that CareNet has a pregnancy decision line where counselors can provide answers and the hope women and men need who call. But CareNet knows that we need more than just people who are on the phone and providing that voice of hope. We need you and me to be involved. And that's where the Church Engagement Initiative comes in. I think a lot of people are asking, how do I turn my conviction, my rock-solid belief in the dignity of the unborn, how do I turn that into action? Making Life Disciples is a program that equips churches to provide compassion and help and hope and discipleship to those who are considering abortion, men and women. Click the green CareNet button today at chrisfabrylive.org. You'll see a note from CareNet to you as a listener to the program, and you'll see more about making your church a lighthouse of hope, a lighthouse of life for those in your church and also in your community. Just go to chrisfabrylive.org, click the green CareNet button today there, chrisfabrylive.org. I'm enjoying the conversation with Michael Panther today. He has written a book called Living with Hope. It's basically his true story of faith, purpose, and mobility. It has a picture of him right on the very front of it, and I guarantee you, it goes by so quickly. Going through this book, it's like reading a film. It's almost unbelievable some of the things that have happened to him. But he mentioned the surgery that he had and the language that he is learning. What was your original language in your tribe there, Michael?
My tribe language is called Dinka, and okay. South Sudan. And then when I came to Kenya, I had to learn Swahili, which is the national language, plus English as well.
Yes.
So I had to learn two languages there.
What was the hardest? Was Swahili harder than English or not?
I think Swahili was harder. Yeah, Swahili was harder. And then English was studying. I started learning English actually by reading the Bible. So it was a great way to learn the English language.
That's
you know?
Fantastic. Okay, so yes. The doctor who did the surgery, his wife also worked there at that hospital. These are special people to you. Tell us about them.
Yes. So, you know, I was just before the break, I was talking about how I became so hopeless and had a lot of questions about why I'm going through all these things. But God spoke to me through his word, you know, in 2 Corinthians 12:9, say that, you know, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in your weakness. I was very weak at that time, but God revealed himself and he revealed his power through me. And that was, he revealed that by bringing the Mead, Dr. Mead and his wife, Mama Jana, and My vagina used to come to the hospital and pray for the patient. And that was kind of her ministry while Dr. Mead was there operating on the kids and being used by God in that way. Mama Jenna was just praying for all the patients that come to the hospital. And so he came one day and looked and came to pray with me. And while she was praying and I was talking with her, she heard the voice from God saying that you need to take care of Michael. And they have their own four kids, and they have left the life here in the U.S. to come there. And they were not making no money and just doing mission work. And you just say, God, I cannot afford, you know, how can I add somebody in my family? We have come here to serve you. Why do you want to give me another kid, you know? So it was just arguing with God. And finally, he say, I cannot argue with God anymore. She went home and told Dr. Mead, and they all decided that they will take care of me and they will let me go to school. And I remember when they came to tell me about it, I almost jumped out of my wheelchair. I was so excited because I never have gone to school before. So this was really a one-in-a-lifetime opportunity for me to go to school. And so I went to school when I was about 15, close to 15 years old. And instead of going to first grade, I went to grade eight, I went to grade seven to start school, because I told the teacher that I'm too old to start in first grade. And I told them, if I fail, I'll keep repeating until I pass, but I'm not going to the first grade. And so I went there and I started passing all my classes, and yeah, before you know it, I was in high school and then made it to the US for university.
Not just, you know, at 15 you start school. I mean, that's incredible. Yes. But you were, as you said, you were learning languages, you were learning other languages, you were reading in other languages. To me, that's just, it just shows, you know, God had his hand on you. And then Dr. Mead and Mama Jana, they and their children, they had to be consulted too. They invited you to come into their family as well, right?
Absolutely. Yes, they had to, you know, let them know that we have these adult, you know, like almost a teenage boy, you know, that we want to bring in. I think some of them could not understand why they're doing that, you know, but that's all God plans, you know. So yeah, they were just.
How did you pay, or how did they pay, or to get the funds to go to LSU and to graduate from LSU?
Yeah, this is a God provision, you know. I think they sacrifice a lot for me. And ideally, do not understand why they did that, you know. And I still, even to this day, don't understand why they even took me in to be one of the kids. Because there were so many other kids in the hospital that come and go. Thousands, and you know, 100,000 of them even, and they picked me to let me go to school. You know,
they chose something. You. They chose.
Yes,
you. There's a picture, yes. Michael, in the book. You with the Mead family, and they're you know, all of them, and you right in front in the chair, in the wheelchair. Yeah. And there's a picture on the video on on the website, your website, where you're receiving your diploma from LSU. Go Tigers. You said go Tigers before we
go Tigers. Yes. Yes, go Tigers. Yes.
This is just an amazing story, but wait, there's more. Because you didn't just stop with I got an education and this, your wound, your pain became this passion that God said, I want to use you in some ways in other people's lives. So I'll take our final break here. Living with Hope, Michael Panther, that's our featured resource. You have to hear what has been going on in Michael's life. You can read about it in the book. You can see that video. Just go to chrisfabrylive.org, click through today's information, and you'll be able to go to their website and see that. I highly recommend you do that. More hope is straight ahead. The enemy wants to whisper in your ear whatever that obstacle is in front of you, whatever the thing is that you feel like is holding back is too big for God. It's too big. You need to give up. You need to let go of hope. And Michael's story reminds us that God is bigger than any disability you have. Bigger than any, you know, if he can conquer death, if he can walk out of that tomb alive, then he can do anything in your life and in mine. And we have to go through, you know, his plan. Michael has said that time and again, God had a plan. God had another plan. He wanted healing. He wanted to be able to run back into his village. Didn't do that. He's still in a wheelchair today. But I want you to hear what God has been doing in and through Michael Panther. The book is Living with Hope. We have it linked at chrisfabrylive.org. So, Michael, because you allowed God to do in you what he wanted, through you, what he wanted, tell me some of the things that are happening around the world because of that.
Yes, Chris, you know, you mentioned about, you know, what I say, that your deepest passions come from your deepest pain. After I've gone through all these things and came to the U.S. and have the opportunity to be able to graduate from college, God put into my heart to go back to Africa and to serve people with disability. In Africa, people with disability are viewed as people with no value in the society. They are viewed as a curse to the society. They are excluded from school, from the community, from work. And so they are, you know, the poorest of the poor. And so when I was in Kenya, the first school that I went to was a school for kids with disability. And those kids, some of them were crawling into classes. I was fortunate enough at that time because when I got out of the hospital, I was able to be given one wheelchair that was one of the three wheelchairs that were used in the hospital for me to be able to go to school. But these kids were literally crawling to school. And that was just a small gleam of what people whose disability live through every day. They go through a lot of suffering. Some of them lay on the floor. And so those images were still very vivid in my mind when I came to the U.S. And I just wanted to see how God could use my life, you know, to go back and serve those people. And so that's when we started Living with Hope, or Hope Mobility, to share God's hope and love, restoring dignity through the gift of mobility. Hmm. And so we bring wheelchairs and other mobility devices. We take a team of therapists, mechanics, and people that will share the gospel. And then we'll go to Africa. We started in Kenya because I've spent a lot of my young adult life in Kenya, and I had a lot of connection over there. And we actually went back to the hospital that treated me to be able to do this work. So we go there, feed wheelchairs to people that are in need, and also share the gospel. Every person that we come in contact with, we give them a Bible, and we let them know that this is the most important gift that we're giving them, that God loved them, and that he created them in his image and special plan, and that, yeah, that God loved them. That's the only thing that we could only share with them, because the God who saved my life, the God that gave me hope, is the same God for them that will also give them hope, that will also give them everlasting life. So we're able to share that hope with everybody that we come in contact with, and there's still so much need. A lot of people, a lot of kids right now are laying on the floor, not going to school, you know, because of lack of mobility. And so I've just been, you know, I quit my job back in 2020, just before COVID, just trying to expand this ministry because of the real need out there, especially in Africa, for people with disability. So we are getting a lot of wheelchair there. But right now we send about maybe close to 10 containers a year, and we are trying to expand that to bring more mobility to people that in need, potentially even making some wheelchair there in Kenya, because there is nothing for people with disability. And so that's what's happening there, and God is using this ministry so far, and I'll continue to use, you know, to do what I can with the life that God has given me to bring hope and mobility to those who are in need in Africa and maybe around the world as well.
What do your parents think of what God has done in you, through you?
Yes, my first, you know, I have two parents now. My American parents, the Meads, are really just, you know, just looking back, you know, they just, you know, see the reason. They even say, you know, Mama Jenna told me one time that I think the reason that we went to Africa on mission field, I think it's because of you. I say, no, it's not because of me. It's because of the other 1,000 kids that you guys serve over there. But, they just been touched by how God has worked everything for his good, you know. And we know that, you know, all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. I've just seen how God has, you know, use everything that we've gone through, the pain that I've gone through, the Mead story, and you know, my story for my parents back in South Sudan, and use all this pain for the good. So my parents back in Africa, I just overjoyed that God served my life, even though I'm in a wheelchair. They see that it's a miracle.
Yes. He's used all this pain. See, and I want you to hear that as you listen today, because your pain is not the same as what Michael has been through. And don't compare yours with his. You know, I wasn't in a civil area that had civil war in it, and at 10 years was, you know, pressed into service and all that. No, you don't have to compare that. Whatever obstacle you're going through, though, what Michael is saying, God wants to meet you in the middle of that struggle and wants to walk with you to not only give you hope and change your life, and not necessarily give you everything that you think at the time that you think you need it, but he wants to walk with you so that you are changed and then others around you are changed. I commend this book to you. I think it's a good way to support what Michael has been doing and wants to do. It's called Living with Hope. It's our featured resource at chrisfabrylive.org. With the remaining 2 or 3 minutes, Michael, what do you want to say to our audience? What final thoughts do you have?
Chris, I just thank you for having me. I'm just so blessed by you and your ministry. Elizabeth Elliot once said that our lives are like a tapestry, the big drawing on the wall. You know, a tapestry is a beautiful thing, but you flip it over, you will see threads running all over. And sometimes it looks very messy, and sometimes very purposeless. But it's not until you go to the other side that you see the artist's intention, that all those random threads start to make sense. You know, our lives are like that. You know, sometimes our life may seem purposeless or may seem messy. We may go through a lot of things, but God knows what He's doing when everything is said and done. God, the same God, is doing everything for His good. So I just want to encourage all of you to hold on God, hold on Him, because He will make everything work out for His good. So hold on that hope and and His promises.
Yes.
Because hope in Christ is everything that we need. So thank you so much.
I'm so glad that we got to hear your voice, Michael. Your smile on the front of the book is infectious. Just that, you know, I could see that light that's there that is coming from inside of you that God has given you. And it have started under a tree there in your home country in South Sudan and has come all the way. Well, Michael lives in Indiana now, but it's come all the way into your living room or cubicle or car or however you're hearing us today. Living with Hope, a true story of faith, purpose, and mobility. Go to the website, chrisfabrylive.org. You've got to go to his website, see that video that I talked about a little bit ago, and you can see the book right there, Living with Hope by Michael Panther, our special guest today at the Radio Backyard Fence. Hope that gives you a little bit of hope. Come on back tomorrow because we're going to talk about going beyond ethnic loneliness, the pain of marginalization and the path to belonging, right here on Chris Fabry Live, a production of Moody Radio, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute.